There are countless jobs that make a society function. What does it mean to perform a certain occupation? What are the day-to-day activities? This is Community Connections, and I'm your host, Heather Rose, and together, we aim to find out. Hi, this is Heather Rose of Community Connections, a program that chronicles the functions and everyday activities of the myriad roles we find in society. Join us today is Dr. Thomas Herr, an educator and author. Hi, Tom.
Hey, it's good to be here with you.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining the show. Well, first off, can we get a little background about yourself?
Well, let me just say that for those of you who are looking at me, I'm younger than I look. How's that? I'm an educator. I led schools for 37 years. I retired basically 9 years ago. Retired is in quotes because I'm now teaching at University of Missouri, St. Louis. And the classes I teach are for prospective principals. So I teach young people who are teaching, who want to be in a school leadership role. Along the way, I've written 7 books and probably 175 articles. And so I am very good at talking about what other people should do. And I talk about what they should do better than what I did.
Cool. So I bet you have like a wealth of knowledge from your experience as an educator.
Well, I made a lot of mistakes, and hopefully I've learned from them.
Yeah, that's what we all hope. Well, what is the theory of multiple intelligences?
Well, the theory of multiple intelligences was conceptualized by Howard Gardner in 1983 when he wrote Frames of Mind. And basically, what he said is that intelligence is problem solving. Everybody agrees with that. But he widened the definition to include not just doing well on a paper and pencil multiple choice test, but he looked at how people solve problems in life. And basically, he initially came up with 7 intelligences and then added an 8th. And the first two that I call the scholastic, and these are not in his order, I'm just presenting them this way, are linguistic and logical mathematical. Those are the intelligences. If you're strong in them, you probably do well in school. But then he also talked about the bodily kinesthetic, the musical, and the spatial intelligence. Those kind of make sense because people solve problems using them. He talked about the naturalist, people who work with animals, work in the outdoors. And then what I, Tom Herr, think are the two most important intelligences, interpersonal and intrapersonal. Interpersonal is reading other people's emotions, knowing what they're thinking and feeling. Candidly, it's kind of empathy, which I talk about now. Mm-hmm. Intrapersonal is knowing yourself. Knowing your strengths and weaknesses. The school that I ran, the New City School in St. Louis, Missouri, was the second school in the country to adopt MI, multiple intelligences. And we did that for over 30 years. And back in the early 90s, before now, No Child Left Behind, we had hundreds of educators visiting us every year, people from all around the world. And for us, using MI meant that we needed to figure out how kids learn and give them opportunities to use their strengths to learn, rather than saying, here's a way to learn. If it's not your strength, you're out of luck.
Yeah,
we
one
said,
size
what
fits
are your
all.
Strengths? How do you learn? Yeah. So joyful learning is a term I used a lot because my kids loved coming to school. They were excited about it. And they did well.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I like school too, but it's more, you know, traditional, I guess. But how many other schools have implemented MI?
Well, back at the turn of the century, there were quite a few of them. And again, I said we had visitors. We held 4 multiple intelligences conferences. Dr. Gardner was our keynote speaker at 2 or 3 of them. And there were many, many schools doing it. But in 2001, the federal government passed No Child Left Behind.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, what that said. That is, unless your school does well on standardized tests, the school might be closed, educators might lose jobs. And so I heard from hundreds of people who said, I believe in MI, I'd like to use it, but I need to focus on my kids doing well on tests. My principal won't let me do it. Now, Heather, you should know, I always said to people that our kids at the New City School did very well on tests. They were good kids, but they did very well because learning was fun and exciting. But too many educators basically moved away from MI because of it. So today, yeah. Dr. Gardner gets inquiries, I get inquiries from people around the world, actually far more from Asia than in the United States. Now, hopefully, maybe, possibly, perhaps, we're going to back away from our adherence to standardized tests when that happens, I think we'll begin to look again at how children learn, being student-centric rather than curriculum-centric. And when that happens, the theory of multiple intelligences makes tons of sense.
Absolutely. What kind of evidence demonstrates multiple intelligences?
Well, Gardner's study was one looking at how people solve problems. It was not empirical. I led a multiple intelligences school when I was at the school for 34 years, and probably 24 of them were using MI. And I saw the powerful effect every day because kids came into school smiling. I write a lot, as I said. One of the articles that I wrote, I talked about the smile quotient. And I said, when you walk into school, you can tell what kind of school it is by whether everybody's smiling. And the smiles, kids and adults, it doesn't mean learning isn't important. It doesn't mean it's a vacation. It means they're learning and it's fun and they're succeeding. So I know firsthand how good MI was for kids. I also know firsthand how good it was for my teachers. They worked their tails off. I had an amazing faculty, but they really, really liked MI because it made them people who created curriculum and reached kids rather than people who worked from a script.
Yeah, I totally see that. But are there like Montessori schools, or is that, can they implement MI?
Yeah, Montessori is a different philosophy, very pragmatic, and it's a good program, but it's not MI.
Yeah, true. So how is the theory applied to an educational setting?
If you understand the theory of multiple intelligences, you begin by making sure that teachers provide different pathways for children to learn. So, for example, in my fifth grade, 10 and 11-year-old students, we studied colonial America and the Civil War. That would probably be true in most fifth grade classrooms. But in typical rooms, kids read and write about the Civil War, colonial America. And what happens is the kids who are good readers and writers, they do really well in school. The kids for whom reading and writing are not a strength, somehow they don't seem to get it, they don't do well, and it's easy for those kids to get turned off. In my fifth and sixth grade classrooms, though, when we talked about this, we had children reading and writing, absolutely, but we also had them drawing maps, making timelines. We had them creating plays when we gave them characters, and they had to develop the dialogue showing how people in the Civil War era would have viewed issues, a Quaker, a merchant, a slaveholder. And so what happened is the children were using their strongest intelligences in learning, not just one pathway. Now, let me again say, Heather, before I get off this, because I don't want people to get confused. Students need to learn to read and write, period. There's no doubt about that. I'm not suggesting that kids can dance their way to success. Some do, but it's a really small number. Kids need to learn to read and write. However, using the theory of multiple intelligences gives kids additional ways to learn. And if we're concerned about them learning the content, they now can learn through their strengths. That causes them to learn more. They get excited about school. Joyful learning becomes the norm. And what I talked about earlier, the smile quotient, that's what you see when you walk in the building because of multiple intelligences.
Absolutely. And when you learn in different modalities, it like strengthens the trace of, yes, you know, the learning. So that's really sounds very sound. What is the role of empathy in a learning environment?
Well, I've recently been writing a great deal about empathy. My last book, which came out a couple of years ago, actually 2022, was called The Principal as Chief Empathy Officer, publishers ASCD Press. And basically, empathy is interpersonal intelligences on steroids. And the case I made there is that not only if you're a principal, but if you're in any leadership position, it doesn't even matter if you're in education. If you're working for an NPR station, you're working for an insurance agency, wherever, if you lead with empathy, what that means is that you make a point of understanding the people with whom you work. You take the time to know them, to understand them, and appreciate them. It doesn't mean you agree with them on everything. It doesn't mean that you're not a leader, but it means you know who they are and you lead through relationships. So in my books, I talk about opportunities to develop empathy, what that looks like. I wrote a book called The Formative Five, and in that I made the case that we need to prepare children to succeed in life, not just to do well in school. Again, they need to do well in school. That should be the basement. succeeding in life is what we should be trying to achieve. And there I talked about 5 social-emotional skills. I call them success skills. I talked about empathy, self-control, integrity, embracing diversity, and grit. Those were the formative 5 success skills. And empathy was the first one because the world needs more empathy. And the case I make is that if you lead with empathy, the people around you are going to be more productive, they're going to be happier, and your empathy is going to grow as well.
Yeah, it sounds like it's symbiotic. So, what can educators and other people do to utilize multiple intelligences?
I think one of the first things we should do is step back and look at what our own MI profile is. How do we learn? And I say if adults are listening, what they can do, how do you spend your free time? And when you're at work, where are you the most successful? If you list the multiple intelligences and you can Google it and find it, it's pretty easy to tell what your strengths are. People used to ask me, how do you tell kids MI strengths? Is there a test you give them? And I said, no, you give kids choices and you see how they learn, how they pursue learning, you'll know what their strengths are. So to me, from an adult perspective, what we should do is know how we learn, what are our strongest intelligences. And then it may be that not only are we pursuing those at home for fun, but maybe there's a way to use that at work. And maybe there's a way to use it even more at home for fun. Daniel Goleman wrote a book called Emotional Intelligence, sold millions and millions of copies. And one of the things he talked about is that people who have strong emotional intelligence know how to relax. They know how to take care of themselves. And I would argue that knowing your intelligence profile is a really important part of that because you'll know how you need to spend time to re-energize yourself.
Absolutely. Cool. So what does a typical workday look like for you?
Typical workday?
Yeah.
So I'm teaching at the university, as I said. Spend a lot of time reading, writing. I visit my students in schools. Spend a lot of time online. I teach a class in the spring that's really fun for me, school culture. And what's fun about school culture is culture is everything. And I talk about ambient learning. I talk about what we learn from the halls and walls. At the University of Missouri St. Louis right now, I'm involved in an all-virtual online doctoral program. And actually, we're considering starting another one on leadership. So if any of your viewers are interested, they can send me an email, T-R-H-O-E-R-R. That's T-R-H-O-E-R-R at AOL.com. We're in the early stages, and I'd be happy to give them some information. The idea that the internet allows us to learn anywhere. And so right now, when you say, what does my workday look like? I'm spending time thinking about what those classes would be. I teach in a couple already. It's really fun. And the bottom line is, every night when I go to bed, hopefully I've made the world a little better.
Yeah, I like to think that too. But... it's hard. Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, you get some resistance. You gotta step up. Well, we all have challenges. What are some of your everyday challenges?
Well, it's hard for me sometimes to stay focused. I probably don't have a great attention span, and I'm really good at biting off too many things and then feeling sorry for myself because I've bitten off too many things. So I try to prioritize and focus on that. I try to work to get out of my comfort zone. I wrote years ago quite a bit about grit. Grit's one of my formative 5 success skills, excuse me, but I wrote about grit and what a key ingredient in developing grit is getting out of your comfort zone, trying something new rather than just staying with what's easy, what you do well. And I talk about that a lot better than I do it. So I also need to work at getting out of my comfort zone. So between that, staying focused, staying prioritized, I have more than enough challenges to keep me busy.
Me too. I think everybody does. But let's end on a hopeful note. What do you see as hopeful in the world?
Well, I think more and more people are beginning to embrace the notion that we really need to care for one another. The country is so polarized now, it's really discouraging, but I'm beginning to hear people say this is not the way it should be, and I'm hearing that louder and louder. To me, that has real implications for educators. I often say that we should be preparing kids to succeed in the world, not just to do well in school. And part of that is preparing our children to work with and learn from people who view the world differently than they do. As one who's preparing prospective principals, that applies to teachers too. In any school faculty, you're going to have a range of people who have different beliefs, different backgrounds, different perspectives. That's rich, that's exciting. But what the principal needs to do is know how to bring these people together and make sure they're a cohesive team where they grow and kids benefit. And I think that dialogue is happening. And to me, that gives me optimism for the future.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm with you there. Well, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, I appreciate your listeners taking the time. They can follow up, as I said, and shoot me an email or get the information from you. I'm always happy to help in any way that I can.
Aw, that's sweet. Well, this is Community Connections. You have been listening to Dr. Thomas Herr, an educator and author. And I'm Heather Rose with Radio Free Roanoke, 95.7 FM.
My name is Tom Herr. I'm a scholar in residence at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. And I'm listening to WROE LP Roanoke.